Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everybody. Welcome again to another episode of The Game on Sunday. Just to say, I'm on my own again this week. But don't say about the art man. I'm well able to do a solo run. Past, but not so much now. Can I just say we got a huge reaction to Fleabag Man there over the last 2 weeks, thanks to all the listeners, I think in your thousands across the globe, across Ireland, and super guys, Fleabag Man, and great reaction. We raised the bar, big bit. We're raising the portal today because we have another special guest, and he's another GA legend. We have great Tom Parsons. Tom Parsons, you are very welcome to The Game on Sunday.
Moss, thanks very much. It's a privilege to be on the podcast and a difficult one to follow some of your previous guests like Billy McMahon, but I hope I can pass on some of my learnings of the game and life and perspective on things.
Yeah, and look, I suppose, Tom, you're coming in terms of your football ability, but you've other roles and responsibilities as well. And look, just the role in the GPA, how it came about, your responsibilities, are you enjoying it and the challenges?
Yeah, it's a really important role and difficult role, Tomás. And I suppose a lot of the guests that you've had on the show, you know, are multiple All-Ireland winners and All-Stars and, you know, have incredible careers. And, you know, if you look at them on paper, you think there's no challenges and there's no obstacles. But the reality is, for the majority of players, and actually all players, even those who reach the pinnacle of success, to play our games and to compete at this level, there's a lot of challenges. And I suppose, you know, in my playing career, Tomás, I've came across all of them, from, you know, the challenges of being a Mayo man, and, you know, that heartbreak of losing All-Ireland finals.
Yeah.
Significant injuries, to not having it all my own way in terms of the challenges that I've had in life, and that's why, you know, I suppose in the GPA, you know, as a player's representative, you always have to represent the most vulnerable player, and I've been vulnerable in my career, and I think that in this role it's an opportunity for me to give back to players and maybe pass on some of the challenges that I've had and challenge things as well, you know, so that,
yeah,
We have a better playing environment for players, and I think that's really important.
You're spot on there, Tom. We'll come back to your role in the GPA maybe a small bit later on in the podcast. I just want to maybe chat to you now about your own football career, and you mentioned a few new things and mishaps that you've had, and the pain and, you know, the sacrifices that needed without getting that ultimate success, which is the All-Ireland glory. But that's an interesting story in itself. Just kind of growing up in Mayo, what's it like in terms of growing up in Mayo and football status, and you're looking around at maybe Kerry and Dublin and the great teams? I mean, what was it like in Mayo?
Well, we just live and breathe football at the most. Like, there's very little hurling and there's very little soccer or rugby. It's living and breathing the game. And, you know, my club, Charistown, had a lot of success, you know, and won their first ever county title and Connacht title in 2000. And I would have been 12. So local heroes was spurring my age group on to play the game. And I just remember spending thousands of hours as a kid out kicking a ball. And, you know, I wasn't the most talented player, but I had that one skill set of being able to fetch a high ball. And that stood me well through the years. But in Mayo, there's an incredible grow, an appetite and interest in Gaelic football. And it's incredible. You know, it's infectious. And, you know, in my club, like no other club in Mayo, you know, if you're not playing Gaelic football, you know, you're not socially connected, you know, sometimes with your community. But, you know, from a young age, on myself, Tomás, just finding a real interest. And it starts with having a really good club in Charlestown and then getting the opportunity to go out and play with your county. And I had a lot of opportunity then, you know, started,
yeah,
you know, Mayo at minor level, you know, I had 2 years at minor, 3 years at under 21. So got a lot of game time and exposure at a young age, which was great, but also a challenge.
Yeah. And did you start out in the school process and playing schools then and getting obviously your club taking over at that stage? Was school activity, playing underage, very strong there, Tom?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. We had a small school in Charistown, 300 people, but we had still won Connacht title and had a very good age group there of players. And sometimes, you know, as a player, you're at the mercy of being involved with a strong team and a good team coming together and getting a little bit of success and getting exposure to good teams. And I was probably fortunate the most to have good teams in Charistown. And, you know, even when I was coming up at 16, 17, 18, we were competing for county titles. And, you know, it's the combination of all those things. And I played a lot of handball and basketball as well. For my sins, I think I've lost the last two All-Ireland handball competitions. Whenever we'd meet the Kilkenny boys, they were just incredible at handball, at the likes of Richie Hogan and the guys. But the handball and basketball definitely complemented that skill set as a midfielder, to have soft hands and be able to box guys out to fetch ball around the middle of the field. And but when I grew up, Tomás, it was just always outside playing the game.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the basketball, because I'd be interested in that in terms of your footballing ability, and that obviously helped you, because I watched Mr. McHale as well in terms of his basketball days, and basketball was already very strong in Cork with Team Britvic and Team Burgerland and Blue Demons and Neptune and Northmont and stuff like that as well. And guys that I knew from a GA perspective were all involved in this club as well. So I had to help you in terms of Gaelic games, that basketball start.
Oh, absolutely. And you're constantly on the ball and you're learning how to use your body. Yes. And you learn that quite quickly. One of the midfielders in Charistown that would have played for Mayo, you would be a legend of our club, David Tiernan. Fantastic midfielder. Wasn't particularly tall, you know, might have been 5'11". There was a lot of bigger guys, but he always was able to use his body to win a ball. And basketball absolutely teaches you how to position yourself and how to pivot. And what's really interesting in basketball as well, Tomás, is you have a small area, so you need to find space in a small area, and yes, you always find space. And, you know, in Gaelic football, you know, even with a condensed pitch, when you have 15 behind the ball, there's still space. And the basketball, the guys who have that basketball experience just know how to pivot and move in a, you know, a 10-meter box to give themselves 2 or 3 yards to receive the ball. And any of the players, I think, that's played it, you know, Kieran Donnelly, Aidan O'Shea, it's definitely benefited them in terms of their, you know, their positional awareness and their ability to win ball.
And then obviously played minor at 2008.
Yeah, 2008 was, and, you know, at that stage, you know, I had 4 or 5 years playing at every underage group, and you get a call up under John O'Mahony to play at senior level and get your debut in the, you know, Connacht Championship against Sligo. And I live in Blaye, which is on the Sligo Mayo border, so there's always banter between the counties. And I would have went to all the Sligo games with my father and admired Eamon O'Hara as a midfielder, and he was my first opponent to Moss. And you know, that was a great outing. You know, I remember I got kicked 2 points and we went to Connacht final, and we ended up going at a campaign that year. I think we lost to Tyrone.
Yes, Tyrone in the semi-finals, I think that, yeah. He lost, yeah.
We lost that game, yeah. But, you know, I was unknown, you know, that first year where, you know, there's not an expectation on you as a player and you're 18 or 19 and you perform week in, week out. You're given a bit of space and a bit of freedom, and you don't get that luxury the following year, because once you build any sort of a name for you, you're watched or you're marked, and there's a little bit more heat in it. But yeah, in those first couple of years, the most, I just remember playing on every team. And at the time I was down in Sligo IT, and at the time they had won Sigerson's. There was Andy Moore and Carol Lacey. There was a strong contingent of Mayo and Donegal players, and we went on to win the pre-season competition. We had bet Galway and Mayo to win that competition. So that just showed how strong the college scene was. So I just remember playing a lot of football in those first 2 or 3 years between college, the county. We had won a county title in 2009, getting that call up in 2008 to play with Mayo under 21 level. There was a lot of activity. But that first year was special, you know, when you get to on your county jersey for the first time.
Yeah, and just like, describe to me what it was like on that first jersey in terms of walking into the dressing room, because like, I've had that experience and other people have as well. Like, it's kind of a day that you never forget, isn't it? Because you're going in there and kind of guys maybe that you looked up to, some of the stars that were performing, and here you are sitting down outside with these guys talking out.
Absolutely. And you know, I remember one of the first sessions that I did was playing in the A versus B game and was on the same team as Kieran MacDonald. And yeah, the encouragement, like the best players are often the best mentors as well, and take time to recognize the young players coming in. And you know, I remember just Kieran's attitude, and you know, I plucked a few balls out of the sky and you know, just looked for Kieran MacDonald. And when you're a kid, you know, those experiences are magic, you know. And it, you know, going from 15, 16 to 18 and going from underage grade to senior grade is a very quick transition. And, you know, I think nowadays you don't see many 18, 19-year-olds breaking into their senior team. Or, you know, if you do, they're very, very well conditioned and advanced. But I suppose in 2008, that, you know, the SNC culture wasn't as it is today. So, you know, there was a few more players breaking, especially around the middle of the field. You wouldn't get that opportunity now. But for me, it was just, you know, very special to be playing with and against players that you would have admired growing up through the ranks.
Can I just take it through? You had success attempts when you kind of challenged it. So when I looked at it from my side of the country down here in Cork, and we talked about Cork and Kerry, rivalry, and we talked about Cork and Tipperary, the Hurling that getting picked up, and the Mead. I was always fascinated by this Mayo and Galway Sligo. There's no blood last year either, Tom, I don't think, is there?
No, like the Connacht Championship is competitive, you know, and Sligo won a few Connacht Championships over the last 10 years. Scammon are fantastic, you know, football culture in their county, and you know, I'll have won a few, and Mayo and Galway. So it's a very competitive championship, no matter who you're drawing the first round. And, you know, Leitrim are up and coming and developing now as well. So, you know, in those formative years, it was all eyes and all thoughts were on Connacht, you know, winning a Connacht title, you know. And I suppose it wasn't until later on in, you know, 13, 14, 15, when, you know, the dial really shifted to we'd won 4 or 5 Connacht titles in a row, and then your sole focus really goes to winning All Ireland, but for a lot of players, you know, winning that Connacht title is very significant. It certainly was for me.
It's good to hear because you know, obviously discussions always come about provincial championships and maybe there should be an open draw and structure should be changing. Like it's when I see it and I watch it, right, there is serious passion. You do take it very, very serious about there. And I mean winning is fantastic. And you're probably known in terms of me in terms of the losing more than the winning, unfortunately, Tom. And that must have had serious heartbreak for the likes of you and the rest of the Mayo people as well, because there's not a man with our child in the country wanted Mayo to win in Northern Ireland.
Absolutely, Tomás. But, you know, I often have a conversation with some of the players who are thinking about hanging up their boots, and we'd grab a coffee, and I suppose the prize in Mayo to win in All Ireland, it's a different prize. And, you know, if you're a sports person and you visualize that prize and what's the outcome and what's the joy you would bring to people across Mayo, and you've no doubts that it's worth every bit of energy and heartache and go for it, because it's such a significant thing. But, you know, we'd often, Tomás, you know, we do workshops around the county and we go down to Hill and Belmullet, and you know, we really kind of connect with the purpose of things, you know, and you know, like I suppose in Mayo through the years, you know, has been decimated with famine, and like we've one of the few counties that has a, you know, a decrease in population. You know, we're talking about the weather and the wind and the rain, you know, on the west coast you get hammered. And I think, you know, the people in Mayo, aside from the game, are resilient people. And there's a history of, you know, not having it your own way and things being difficult. And I think above all, you know, they look at their county team, you know, and they want their county team to reflect the type of people that we are in Mayo. And, you know, I think that above all needs to come out in every performance. And, you know, from my perspective, it would be very hard to square off, you know, losing those All-Irelands if I felt we left a stone unturned or we didn't perform or there was energy left in the tank. That would be very difficult for me to square off. But, you know, there still is something in going hell for leather and performing. And if you're best and it comes down to a replay and the following game, you lose by a point because, you know, sometimes some of those elements are out of your control, but the most important thing is to perform. And you know, the Mayo people, I think, really respect that the most. You know,
that was my next question, because the support is phenomenal. When you see the numbers that travel to Croke Park to support people, the kind of championship, it's coming from everywhere: New York, Boston, Chicago. Any place that there's a Mayo man, that must lift yourselves as players, even the negativity of losing and how you turn it on its head, it definitely outweighs the negativity in terms of. There's a lot of positives there, Sam.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the people of Mayo are just incredible. And, you know, I went down to play Cork in the football and, I particularly remember 2017, we had a run and we played Cork and there could have been 20,000 at the game. And I'd say there was 18,000 Mayo people, you know, traveling. So, you know, there's other teams that would be envious of the energy and the, you know, the alignment and the connection that we have with the people of Mayo. And that's something very special. And that, you know, that is what helps keep players going back, you know, that, you know, the Mayo supporters hasn't decided to, you know, to lose faith in this team, you know. And and I think if you're not knocking at the door and preparing to be in the top three or four teams and preparing to be in a semi-final or final, you've no chance, you know.
No chance, yeah. And I agree with you. And I mean, that's the beauty, right, in terms of, look, there's so many teams out there want to win in Ireland every year. Only one can do it. But if you put yourself up there with a chance to do so, and there is, like, there's no negativity coming from your supporter behind you all the time. I think that's, I mean, it would look a bit, like you mentioned about talking to players, it might be easier for a guy to say, no, I've enough of this, we're not going to win anything, I'm hanging up the boots. But there is a drive there all the time, isn't there? There is a drive to try and go again and go again and get to that ultimate goal.
Absolutely. And again, you just need to reflect on the prize and maybe even to us, you know, sometimes we need to, as athletes and how we send the game, is redefine what success is, you know, because I've two kids here and all I want for them is them to be the best that they can be. And I've often done interviews to Moss and I'd be asked, you know, what's the most memorable game in a Mayo jersey? And for 2 or 3 years, I used to say, oh, the, you know, the time we won the 5 in a row, Connacht titles in Brook history there, or, you know, winning county and Connacht titles with my club, and referencing the games that we, you know, that we won, the titles that we won. But in reality, the most memorable games for me was those finals where we went toe to toe, and, you know, at the end of the game, you're on your back and you've no energy left to give, and you've given it all, and you know that you've burned the midnight oil and turned, left no stone unturned, but you performed. And the emotion of losing after that, it's a very memorable feeling. And, you know, the reality, most, I think life is, you know, or sport kind of mirrors life. And in life, we people who don't get it all the wrong ways, or we experience bereavements or setbacks. And, you know, so it's funny, I've had a lot of setbacks away from, you know, All-Ireland finals, or big injuries. Yeah. And, you know, if I was doing an interview and someone said, would you swap all those experiences, you know, for not getting injured or having won that All-Ireland final in 2016. But these are all elements that have helped my character, you know, and helped me deal with difficult situations in life with my family and kids and my career and work and some of the stuff that I'm engaging with in the GPA. And I think it's all really important stuff. And I just think, you know, Mayo, it's important to reframe it. And if anyone is a coach, you know, nobody talks about, no good coach talks about the result. They talk about getting the performance, get the performance, get the performance. And if that doesn't turn out to be a win, then so be it. But as long as you perform, that, you know, that's what's in your control. So
yeah,
that would my mentality on those games for sure.
Yeah, it's a brilliant mentality and brilliant to hear. As you mentioned, it hasn't been all easy here, right? I kind of looking back, and you came in 2008, probably in a 10-year period, and 2018. That injury in 2008, obviously, was heartbreak. I don't know whether I've got it described properly, but it dislocated knee, ruptured ligaments, calf and hamstring damage.
Yeah, it was one of those moments to loss. And I think if it happened to me at 21, I would have been in a very vulnerable place because, you know, my life was just consumed by the game. And, you know, fast forward, you know, 2018, you know, I was vice captain of the team. I was in my pomp, really performing to the best of my ability. I just felt this is where I'm, you know, at my prime. That injury happened, you know, and you find yourself.
How old did you? How old were you?
I was 30.
So you were really in your prime at that stage, yeah?
Yeah, I was 30, yeah. and playing really good football, you know. And then you're in a tackle and you find your leg rotating in the wrong direction and everything blows. And that was a real journey for me, Tomás, in terms of, you know, how would you overcome an obstacle and how do you find the positives in it? You know, no matter how positive you are, and we're talking about trying to find the positives in losing an All-Ireland, you know.
Absolutely. I'm sure it's worse. They're not worse than any other. And when you see and hear something like that, what was it like for you, Tom? How did you cope with that? I mean, obviously heartbreak.
Yeah, heartbreak. Absolutely. I mean, I had newest consultants. First of all, I had surgery immediately and put everything back into place. And then the leg was just a mess. And I was meeting consultants who were worried about blood flow and my leg functioning right again. And then a few weeks later, some more consultants who really just said, Tom, you just need to make peace with dropping your high performance sport and being grateful that you'll be able to get function and walk and hopefully play with your kids, you know. So when a big obstacle with Moss, and then you were trying to, I'd be a big believer. Andy Moran would be, a close friend of mine, and Simba are, we try to square off and rationalize and put perspective on losing those big games and, how does it develop your character? And, he had won player of the year, I think, at 32. He completely changed his game in 2017. And I always liked his approach to dealing with growing and developing and dealing with setbacks. But I know, to cut a long story short, and he left me a book called The Obstacle is the Way. And it's about coming in contact with an obstacle and then looking at it and analyzing it and saying, is there an opportunity in this? And for me, the opportunity was, Jesus, if I actually can rehab or come back and play with me, or even if it's for 10 minutes, wouldn't that be an amazing message to be able to bring back to the local school in Charistow, the people in Mayo, to talk about resilience and never give up? And isn't that as symbolism or symbolic as that Mayo team that just won't give in and just keep coming back? And isn't that probably what Keith Higgins or Colin Boyle or the other lads would do? And so I just seen it as, right, like, this is now my All-Ireland, and if I come back and play from this, it's going to align with those workshops we did in Aachen and Belmullet and finding the purpose of playing with your county, which is all about inspiring people in Mayo to be resilient and never give up and keep going. And that was a very powerful opportunity in the obstacle, if that makes sense.
It's and obviously recovering from it, you were in a very lonely place, Tom, recovering from an injury like that. Obviously, you get obviously family help, you get county board help. I would be thinking the GP were behind you, some capacity helping in terms of your recovery process, and maybe just on the mental side of it, for your own personal side in terms of development and accepting it. And obviously, you got a lot of support.
Yeah, look, I mean,
were you on your own? Was it that lonely?
Yeah, look, like everything. Everything can be lonely, and everything is perspective, you know. A few lessons that I took away from it was, I actually did all my rehab away from the Mayo team. My wife is a physio, and, we did a lot.
You're good to a TLC, so, yeah?
Yeah. Wise noise to what, you know.
That's why you're staying away from your daughter Chai. She told you, I'm looking after you now, nobody else.
Absolutely.
Very good.
You can imagine, like, I often sympathize most with players who are rehabbing an injury around the squad. And you know this as a player.
Yeah.
Everybody's looking at you running up and down the side of the pitch. You know, every session that coach or manager is, oh, how are you getting on? When are you returning? And there's whether you like it or not, that develops a pressure of a return to play. So I decided, my approach was, look, I'm going to do all this, myself. I have the support structure of my wife and my family. absolutely tap into the experts in the Lyon physio team and Santry. But we needed, like, my background is an engineer and project manager. Like, we needed to design it and figure it out, project manage it. And, you know, I had some calls with some physios in South Africa and some of the rugby guys down there. The rugby captain had a horrendous injury. And we got some equipment up as well that was never used in Ireland. So, like, there was no magic pill or surgery or, you know, it's actually just simple exercises, working at it day in, day out. Some Fridays you'd be sore. Another Friday, you know, you're feeling good. Ups and downs. You know, there's no magic rehab. And you just had to figure it out yourself because no one had the answer. So what I often say to players is, you know, sometimes being on the side of the pitch and thinking you have all the support can be a negative because it puts pressure on you. So the first time the Mayo lads seen me back, I came back, you know, 12 months later in touring and took part in a full training session. And the guys, you know, the last time they seen me on the pitch, my leg was backwards. So that was a big moment. And, you know, I remember the lads just taking a minute at the end of the game, we're in a circle, and, you know, Andy spoke up and said, look, I just want to acknowledge what Tom has done and say huge respect. And, you know, getting that acknowledgement from your teammates means a lot, a hell of a lot, you know. And, yeah, come back and play it, which is great.
And, yeah, before we just finish on the football side, and I want to take it more towards the GPA side in the couple of minutes that we've left. You retired in 2021, is that correct? Yeah, you got back at the pitch, obviously, after that injury. You retired in 2021.
Yeah, so 2 years later. Yeah, I've got
2 years.
Two seasons with my club and with Mayo. I came back. I got game time that year in the All-Ireland semi-final, and then started the first game against Galway and the FPD the following year. I got some league time and championship time. But, you know, never, I suppose, you know, a combination of, you know, a change of management and change of guard, moving from 30 to 32, you know, didn't get the opportunity to, you know, showcase myself like I did in 16, 17, and 18. But, you know, and did return to performance. So there's one thing people say when you return to play, but were you right? Like, touch wood, Tomás, like, my leg is perfect now. And I go and I run my train. And now my wife did tell me that, look, when you retire with Mayo and your quest for Sam, you know, you no messing about, no going back playing with the club for 5 years or Junior B, or, you know, respect this because I want you to be able to play with your kids. And you did too much. So the last time I kicked a ball was really in Crow Park, you know, in an empty stadium. And that's hard to square off because you think you'd like to get another few years with your club. And you know, I decided to you know, respect the body and leave in good health. And I think that's really important, Tomás, because I see a lot of players.
Yeah, Tom, I'm starting off good, actually, yeah, but I think that's incredible, right? So it's Tom Parsons knew the time was right for you to go at that stage, yeah? So, I mean, I think your next statement was that, yeah, there's a lot of players there. Maybe should be kind of heeding to that as well in times. There is a time to go and there is a time maybe that people maybe stay too long as well. But you knew it yourself, did you? You knew it yourself, it was time is up, time to go?
Yeah, there was a big changeover of guard as well, you know, David Clark, Keith Higgins, Chris Barrett, James O'Shea, Dora Vaughan. You know, it was the time, you know, that last, in 2020, you know, there was a movement. It was time to allow the young players to come through as well, naturally. But also, it was selfishly, you know, I had achieved coming back and playing with my club and county, and I just needed to call it a day, you know, and
yeah, because I remember my own situation, Tom, as well, because, look, I had a very good career here as well. And again, there was a good few of us coming to the end of our time, and Kevin Hennessy, Antonio Sullivan, and we've been there a long time. So I get a call from the team after Dr. Khan on the Monday morning asking me, it was after a match of the Sunday that hadn't gone well so far. He says, where are you? He says, I'm in work. He says, give me a call there later on. Come to see me in the surgery. He says, and bring your hurley and your gear bag and your helmet with you. He's kind of wondering, what was this all about? Where was this going? So I go in, he says, your time is up. It's time to go, time to walk away. And probably the best advice I ever got as well. And it's been a fantastic career for you, Tom. I mean, in terms of what you destroyed there and the heartache that you've gone through in terms of, obviously, losing the big games, but that injury is just incredible. And to recover from that and have the positive that you're having is incredible. So you move on to the GPA. Can we just touch on that in terms of what's life like within the GPA at the moment right now?
Yeah, no, it's a really important role. And professionally, I'm an engineer. And really, you know, I was a volunteer with the GPA, with the NEC, and as a rep through the years, because I suppose, look, when I was vulnerable at 21, 22, or even through the injury, I availed of all those really important welfare development services, you know. Even down to, you know, the past player fund that we work on, like there's a lot of players that keep playing up until they're 40, 45, and they need hips replaced and knees replaced. And there is a pressure on intercounty players when they retire to go on and play with the club and keep going. And there's 10 minutes in the end. You know, there's a huge cultural connection to playing the game, particularly with your club. And, you know, I'm forever trying to encourage players, look, that the load that you've put yourself under as an intercounty player is significant, and you've managed injuries. You know, it's tight. Hang the boots up before your body forces you to. But I suppose my role with the GPA is, you know, it's really adversarial, and it's important to represent the voice of players. And it's an uncomfortable role because in one way, to do the job right, you need to challenge the status quo and you need to push change. And, you know, we've had fantastic, you know, the GA is fantastic and we've fantastic leadership in the GA. But, you know, the balance of, you know, getting, you know, everybody has, you know, different visions, you know, whether it's, you know, investing more infrastructure or stadia or coaching and development or the intercounty or the underage or, you know, so you have so many different units in Gaelic games pushing for things that it's really important that you have a very strong player's voice. It is uncomfortable. But that's how, you know, it's meant to be. And what I try and do is, you know, when I connect with players, I think players connect with me because I have been in their shoes. I've been the player that, you know, was dropped from the county panel because I wasn't performing, and been brought back, and, you know, I picked up an injury and didn't get physio covered, or was out of work for a couple of months and, you know, was down my salary. You know, all the vulnerabilities that players experience, I just thought in my playing career, you know, I felt all these frustrations, and I want to try and create a world and influence to try and improve the standards for players, because they give so much to the game. Like what players do, and we see it day in, day out, Ross, and it's no different to your playing days. You know, you stayed in the pitch and you spent thousands of hours with kids, and there's great humility in players. And it's important that we recognize that, we give back, and we have an environment that protects their welfare, but also recognizes what they give to the game as well.
Yeah, it's like that's an incredible concept, because like coming from your background, and you know, you without the All Ireland success, you've had the heartache, you've had the loneliness, the injury. You're able to explain it to guys that are out there that are vulnerable in terms of it's not all about All Ireland medals, right? That's the goal. That's the high point for everybody. But underneath, there's a lot more as well. And I look at your four pillars in terms of the GPA, the representation, the welfare, the development, the equality. Obviously, the equality side of this is getting bigger and bigger every day we go along. I see recently the players passed 5 motions at your GPA AGM. Can I just take you through one or two of those, Tom? I see the kind of the past, one of the motions was the improved injury coverage for GAA, the ladies' Gaelic football, and the Camogie. An awful lot has been made of that this year.
Yeah, it's an important one. And Shane O'Donnell, first time.
Shane O'Donnell, yes. Seen, yeah, Shane O'Donnell as well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He brought that one to the fore. And, you know, it's, you know, it is important. You know, he had suffered a severe concussion and was out of work. And, you know, more than myself, I was out of work for 7 months, you know, because I had 3 surgeries. I was in the brace and, you know, you just weren't fit to work. And you know, the insurance scheme there, I think it's 300 euros a week. It leaves you in a very vulnerable place when you have 2 kids and a mortgage, and or you're a student and you're a young professional living in Dublin with rent. I mean, you could find yourself in poverty very quickly. And, you know, I think it's important that we protect the amateur status, but that we don't, that players are aware of the risks and for what players give to the game, I think, having that protection that if they suffer an injury like I suffered or Shane O'Donnell or anyone suffered, that they're protected. And currently there's no guarantee, there's an injury scheme there. And, you know, I think before we go building any more mega projects, if we need to put aside a few bob to make sure no player who gives so much to their county is left, you know, in a vulnerable place, or their family is left in a vulnerable place, we need to address those things. So, you know, that's
the could I just come across, just in terms of that, in terms of, I know it's very much about county, right? Just does the club guy come into that as well? Because I often look at this and I say, the club guy could be able to work, have the exact injuries yourself. The club guy could be a sole trader. Nobody's going to pay him when he's out. A club may be struggling financially and stuff like that as well, might be able to pay whatever salary or in terms of what allowances they get. So does the GPA cover that as well?
Correct, yeah. No, that was, you know, Shane's sentiments was that this should be covered for every player, you know, that, yes, you know, that this, you know, and if it did cost, you know, to run the numbers and the analysis on it and you know, I think it's an initiative very well made. Now, look, obviously we represent intra-county players and that's our remit, but, you know, speaking about this and lobbying for this, be absolutely encouraging that this is for all players, you know. And I think that's what you need. You need to keep pushing the boundaries and ensure that the investment in player welfare is there.
Okay, and just another one of the motions that I see was passed as well, and I'm very interested in this one, and you're taking this. It's a proposal to call on the GA to remove pre-season competitions.
Here,
what's the mood behind that, or what's the reason? I have my own reasons, which I think is a good one, but I'm interested to hear from your side in terms of the background to this.
Yeah, the background to this, I mean, you know, when I was, something we didn't talk about today, Tomas, but like when I was 21, I had a chronic hip issue, and that was from playing with multiple teams, Sigerson Club, under 21, senior. And there was a huge amount of multiple eligibility in January where,
yes,
we're playing the pre-season competitions, and it's where you'll probably test out a lot of the students to see how they fare out, and you know, it's saturated with the amount of activity in January and February with the college competitions, and it's forcing teams to come back and start training earlier. So, you know, I remember speaking with Andy Moran, and his first fixture was last year was Leitrim versus Galway in the new dome on the 2nd of January. Galway previously in, you know, All-Ireland finalists. And the consequences of getting, you know, if Leitrim went into that unprepared and, you know, publicly being beaten by 20 points, you know, is significant on the confidence in the team and the confidence in the public on where the county's going. So that forces teams then to start training, you know, in October or you know, yes. Early in November. So, you know, I just feel that we had 9 months of activity to loss, and players, this has been discussed as a player welfare topic. When the All-Irelands were in September, we had all this activity. We've now squeezed the season to finish in July, and we haven't reduced one game. We've actually added. So
it's incredible, Tom. And look, Mr. Spillane and Mr. Lester would verify this. We've had this argument and conversation all through the championship in terms of the summer campaign and going out in whatever in December or January, February, in the worst of conditions. People are trying to do strength and conditioning programs, putting guys on the pitch, overloading guys you mentioned, cottages, Fitzgibbon, Sigerson Cup, traveling up and down the country for college games. Full of activity. And then you have a championship campaign, which we mentioned a lot about, the chance of recovery in terms of, like, for player welfare. We've mentioned this on a regular basis. The amount of games that were coming so fast, it was very little in terms of applying to actually recover. Is there an opportunity that we need to expand it out a bit further? We need to push July out a bit further, because the games are coming fast and thin, and in the county players say, yeah, we love it. But afterwards, when they see the couple of months that we've just gone through, and then guys are asked to go for club after that, it's very, very tough for amateur players. They're not robots.
Exactly. No, it is. And, you know, I suppose, the GA would have recognized that and would have surveyed counties on 5 or 6 options. And you know yourself, Tomás, when you survey counties on 5 or 6 options, and some included dropping the league finals or extending the season or starting the league earlier, the responses came back, and they came back diluted, because everybody would have a different opinion on how you do it. But I think it needs a leadership decision on player welfare. And I think the no-brainer first step is to remove the preseason competitions. That gives you 3 weeks, you know. And then, look, I agree. Games need to be spread out, whether it's Creek goal going into August or starting the National League a week earlier because you have no preseason competition, or rethinking how you do your league structure. Do you have Division 1A, 1B, and the top of each play in a final? You know, that creates another 2 or 3 week space. But I agree, Tomás. I think, you know, we're trying to get the data back from players. In fairness, it's important to give any new structure time to embed. But some of the sound bites that we're getting is that there's even more of an expectation on intercounty players when they return to play with their clubs, and that professionalism in their club scene is increasing. And so, you know, it's the demands in intercounty players now, I think, to those has been higher.
It's higher than I've ever seen. And like, there was no strength and conditioning back in playtime, no gym. But they now have to go through a program like that. Then they've got to deliver on the field of play. And then you've got to go back and perform with a club. And you're right. I mean, go back in the club and you're in an intercounty player. You need to be at your best. You need to actually deliver, and you need to perform, or else, because you could be ridiculed in the club as well. And like the sports science and the modern science that I'm looking at and reading about across the world is everything is about recovery. Everything is about giving the player time and space to recover, to get the freshness back. And I just feel at the moment in the GAA calendar year, it's all compacted into a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
It cannot be good for player welfare.
No, it can't. And we also have, you know, publicly and within Gaelic games, there's a huge pressure for a county to perform. And this culture of, you know, like if a new manager comes into Mayo and doesn't perform, that manager will be out on his feet in 12 months' time. So the KPIs on management teams now is to push and drive, and, you know, we need to get promoted and more competitive than ever. And when you have those KPIs and that push, you know, that drives negative behaviors, because you push players too hard, you know. So I wonder, like, you know, do we need to reevaluate, you know, what success looks like for teams? Is it because I don't think developing players and player welfare is, you know, when you review the end of year and how a team performed, is that one of the KPIs? I don't think it is. And that's where we need to get to Ross, where,
yeah,
okay, winning at all costs is great and it's honourable, but we can't keep doing this and players being, you know, amateur players being pulled pillar to post. And, you know, like I'm a serious, you know, I think we've done a lot of research on hip issues and hip injuries, and you know, this level of activity is causing. So look, that's you know, there's a lot of things we need to do. One, I think, no brainer is get rid of these preseason competitions, and then what's next? But the do nothing, Tomas, is not good, and that's where we're at.
Yes, yeah, and I just look. We're almost out of time. Just, I mean, do the GAA listen to you as a body in terms of your findings there and what you've just described to me? And second part of that question is, overall, could the GAA do more in terms of supporting the GPA?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, the decision-making body is Central Council. You know, I represent the players there. I have all the objective data. You know, but there's 60 voices in that room where there's one player rep, you know, and, you know, the intercultural players are responsible for helping, you know, find the resources to fund all the good coaching development. And, you know, I feel there's not enough respect to the player's voice. And to be honest, I'm quite often the GPA are quite often the only dissenting voice. And, you know yourself, Tomas, in business or in life or in any organization, you need to be having hard conversations about this stuff.
Yes.
You know, I wouldn't be satisfied with where the attitudes and mindsets are in player welfare at the moment. And that's not to say there's really good leaders in the GAA, but getting more people in the administration that has played the intercounty game, that understands the challenges of high performer players, is really important, because we've got some fantastic people who understand the challenges of volunteers, which is really important, and the time it takes to administer the game. I absolutely respect that. But I have concerns about, a deep understanding of the challenges of not just intercounty players, but also club players. And, you know, the professionalism and the drive is, you know, you look at some of the mega clubs now around the country to us, they're like county teams, you know.
Yes, and that's filtering down, Tom. That's filtering down to the smaller club as well. The expectation in smaller club is we nearly want to be like an intercounty team in terms of its preparation, the talent we bring in, in terms of strength and conditioning, physios, everything like that, the nutritional side of it, which is fair, but there is a danger, though, is that we might go completely over the top on this, there.
Yeah, there is. And look, I suppose the players, like, this isn't coming out of nowhere. So it won't be a surprise to anybody. I've been lobbying to, you know, over 24 months. But, you know, if the player's voice isn't heard to us, that's when, you know, it spills out publicly, or, you know, there's discontentment on the ground and maybe that's what needs to happen to improve player welfare. But I think we just, you know, the more people we have really pushing, really challenging to make sure, you know, the player's welfare is front and center, is so important. And look, I'll keep fighting the battle. And there's a lot of really good people in GPA as well that sit on various committees. And Podge Collins is one, for example, that sits in the player rules committee. So we're lobbying and we're pushing, and it is uncomfortable, but that's exactly what we need to be doing. And I'm putting some hope and trust in the leadership that they listen to the players and listen to the motions that were passed and implement these changes that we're talking about here tomorrow, and start putting player welfare really front and center into the future of our games.
And if I asked you, in terms of that, I mean, everybody would be very, very happy with that in terms of player welfare side of it and everybody be well looked after and catered for. Where do you see the GA in 10 years' time? Do you see players being paid?
This is a worry for me, Tomas, because, we all know what's happening, around not even the senior teams, but the club teams, people are driving professional standards on amateur players. So, I think there needs to be a review of the amateur status. And I think the biggest challenge here, Tomas, is, and I said at the start, is that we need to look after our most vulnerable players, and the most vulnerable players are students. And, getting, good scholarship grants to students that they can actually play their game. But we really need to look at professionalism. And, if you look at the intercounty environment, Tomas, there's a huge drive in terms of the professionalism of the game, So I hope that we can, and it's in our remit and interest, we have to protect the amateur status in the game. If the rate of, impact of player welfare keeps increasing, like we've seen over a number of years, I worry about it. And at a risk register, I would have that front and centre on where the game is going. And that's an onus on all of us to really truly look at that. And it starts with player welfare. If players feed well, if players feel that they're treated fairly, and equally, we talk about, it's important that, the Donegal hurlers and every player that gets to represent their club and then is picked to play with their county, is treated fairly and is given the best chance to succeed. So, it's a question we should be asking regularly to us.
I agree with you, Tom. And listening to you there, I must say the GPR are in very good hands, the likes of yourself at the helm, because it's incredible insight. We could talk about the professionalism. That's probably another three podcasts in itself in its own right to discuss that. I'm going to finish up with you, and I'm going to say, just on a positive note, tell me you're heading to Kin, you're sharply, I believe, with Island Currents. Yeah, and that's something to look forward to, Tom, isn't it?
Absolutely, Tomas. And look, I just think, and the more I'm in this role, we've incredible people in Gaelic Games, not just players, administrators, like what we give. But I have an insight and can represent the intercounty players. Last year we just asked, I think 55 players, 50 came back and said yes. They individually raised €10,000 to go out and do a really good thing. And, that trip puts things into perspective as well. To us, we can give out about the challenges we have in Ireland. But when you get out there to Africa and you see, there's a lot of devastation in the agriculture and land. And, you can really see the impact of drought and getting out there, planting trees, bringing Gaelic Games out there, visiting schools is an incredible way to give back. But also for players and for myself, the journey and the personal development and perspective it gave us was just incredible. And, one of my teammates there, Aidan O'Shea, went out last year and I thought it was one of his best performances, in a Mayo jersey this year. Like he just, and I'm not saying it's down to the Africa trip, but a number of the players that did go out, it gave them perspective. And, a lot of what we do as well, Tomas, isn't just player welfare. We're trying to invest in player development and allow players to see beyond, self-esteem beyond the game. And these programs really help with that. So anyone listening that wants to get in and donate to any of their local player that's going on the trip, please do. 100% of this proceeds goes to planting trees. We have a fantastic partner with Alan Kearns and South Alp Africa. It's completely driven by players, which is amazing and is reflective of, the decent human beings that we're privileged to have in our games. We've okay. Very special game.
That's brilliant, Tom. Listen, we got to wrap it. I just want to say thanks a minute, Tom. I just hope those trees you're planting outside are ash trees, so we'll have plenty supply of the commands for future reference. So look, just going to say it's been a brilliant insight. Thank you very much for joining us. today on the Game and Sunday podcast. Absolutely brilliant.
All the best.
Thank you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.